This is Community Matters on 92 Gold. If it matters to you, it's on Community Matters.
Thank you for joining me here on 92 Gold and 104.3 Kinzu Country for our Community Matters program. And joining me today on the Community Matters program is our Erie News Now Harrisburg correspondent, Brendan Scanlon. And Brendan, you've been doing a lot of work this year covering all of the different things that are happening at a statewide level here in Pennsylvania. The things that you've been doing, the work that you've been covering, is just ramping up as we're getting closer to election season. And it's almost here. So would you mind going through and giving us a little bit of details on how things have conspired since we've last talked? How's your summer been?
Sure thing, Aaron. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you, as always. It's been a busy few months. It's been an exciting summer. Obviously, things have been a little quiet in Harrisburg from a legislative standpoint. Obviously, when lawmakers finalized that budget back in July, they didn't return to Harrisburg until September, early September. So we had a little bit of time to look into a couple different things, to focus on the elections. It's been a good couple of months. But yeah, talking about that election, obviously some very high profile races in Pennsylvania, as we've been talking about. The race for governor and, of course, the race for U.S. Senate are among the top two that are, you know, garnishing national attention. Everybody's paying attention to. But there's, you know, also races in the General Assembly, too, for the state Senate, for the state House. Obviously, Democrats are going to be looking to try to pick up a few more seats. Fingers crossed for them that they're going to try and get a majority. It's, you know, it's unlikely, but you never know what will happen. Obviously, this year being a midterm year tends to favor the other party that does not control the executive. So, you know, in the White House at the federal level. So Republicans are thinking it's going to be a solid election year for them. They're looking to not only pick up seats in Congress, but hopefully at the state level as well. And like I said, Democrats are really going to be hoping to try to pick up some seats, especially as we see these new House maps at the state level, thanks to the redistricting process that took place earlier this year. So that being said, we'll see what happens at the state level. But of course, the race for U.S. Senate between Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman and Dr. Mehmet Oz is going to be a really, really huge race. Obviously, when you're looking at control of the U.S. Senate and the massive implications that that can have, that's going to be a major one to keep our eye on. And I'm also excited, too, because throughout some point in the month of October, our Washington, D.C. correspondent Rachel Knapp and myself will actually be following along with both the Fetterman and Oz campaigns. So exactly who's going to be following which campaign, we're still working out and when, but that's definitely something to be looking forward to, something I'm very excited to be looking at as well. And then, the race for governor, I mean, Josh Shapiro, the current attorney general, and State Senator Doug Mastriano, both looking to replace Governor Wolf, who is term limited. And some recent news just the other day, we found out the fundraising reports for the last most recent cycle for Mastriano and Shapiro. And Shapiro, this should come as no surprise for a lot of folks, but broke records, raising a record $25.4 million from June 7th to September 19th. And that's about, you know, that 3 month period. And he still has about $10.9 million left in the bank. So that's a very impressive amount for a gubernatorial candidate, especially. And Mastriano, on the other hand, brought in about $3.16 million during that same time period. And he's got about, I think, just over $2.5 million left in the bank available to spend. So how each candidates are going to spend those funds that they still have remaining is, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I'm sure obviously a lot of your listeners have been seeing plenty of ads on the airways, on the radios, billboards, you name it. And definitely probably a lot of Shapiro ads, because like we just talked about, I mean, some really large amounts of money that he was able to raise to promote and to purchase a lot of that airtime and those ads. So we'll see what happens between now and November 8th. But I can almost guarantee that we're probably going to see a lot more ads, probably from both candidates between now and then.
That's going to be really interesting to see as this all heats up and as this gets closer to, you know, the election day here. Now, one of the things that I'm curious to talk about is some of the work that has been done that you've done, you know, while they've been, you know, out of session and stuff like that. Some of the work that you've done involves something that's going to be, you know, a pretty big sticking point when they're getting to these, you know, larger arguments when you look at the gubernatorial race and things like that. And what I'm talking about is the prescription healthcare bills that they've been working on and some of the work that you've done covering that. Now, would you mind going through the ramifications and implications of these bills passing and, you know, what they could entail for both sides?
Yeah, sure thing. That's a great question. Well, we recently, you know, over the last couple of months, I've to look into, you know, the high cost of prescription drug prices. We just did our special report on it, which aired recently on Erie News Now. And that's, you know, available under the Harrisburg Bureau page on erienewsnow.com if you did want to check that out. But over the course of the, you know, those couple of months, we spoke with drug pricing experts. We spoke with folks, you know, one of the millions of Pennsylvanians, millions of Americans that rely on these prescription drugs daily, you know, morning and night, to hear kind of sacrifices that they were making to be able to afford medication, to hear about sort of how certain drugs weren't, you know, being entirely covered by Medicare, other state programs. I mean, sort of the challenges that they're facing, you know, with having to pay for other rising costs, you know, gasoline, food, groceries. It's really a really tough situation for a lot of Pennsylvanians and a lot of Americans around the country. So we looked into sort of the drug supply chain, very, very complex supply chain. I still don't fully understand it, you know, as we're speaking right now, even after researched the last couple of months. It's very complex. And from what we've heard, it's intentionally complex because, you know, a lot of these bigger pharmaceutical companies, pharmacy benefit managers and others, they don't really want drug user or drug takers, those who rely on these prescriptions, to see an itemized receipt. They really don't want folks to understand the complex drug supply chain, because that's how they're sort of making money, whether it's from, you know, receiving discounts from manufacturers and not passing along those discounts to consumers and that type of thing. So we really got into the weeds specifically on pharmacy benefit managers and sort of how their role changed over time. These companies, these larger companies, were originally supposed to act sort of as a negotiator to manage those discounts I just talked about, to negotiate lower drug prices for insurance companies, for private employers and other individuals. And we sort of talked about how their role over time changed, where they weren't just necessarily acting as the negotiator, but they started as one drug expert I spoke with said it best, in my opinion, is the firefighters and the arsonists to drug pricing. So originally supposed to try to manage those lower discounts, you know, which they're able to do, but they're also not passing along those discounts. You know, they're controlling what drugs get on the formulary, and which is basically a list of drugs that are covered by a certain insurance. So now they're, you know, they own their own pharmacies. They're controlling what drugs get on the formulary, what drugs are getting these discounts. And so they've really been able to get their hands in on every level of the drug supply chain, which has really helped them receive some massive, massive amounts of money. These are Fortune 15 companies now, which were originally supposed to keep drug manufacturers and insurance companies sort of in line to try to negotiate those lower costs. You know, what we saw, and I'm sure as a lot of your listeners know, you know, many of us Pennsylvanians and around the country rely more so on insurance coverage for a lot of these drugs. And as Americans, over the last maybe four decades or so, relied more and more on insurance coverage and things like that, the role of PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, kind of increased. And I think a really interesting thing, too, that I talked about with the pharmacy, who basically is cutting out PBMs, who's basically cutting out the middlemen and getting lower prices for their consumers. They basically said insurance is for high cost, unknown events. So, you know, we get car insurance in case of a car accident. We get, you know, flood insurance or home insurance for, you know, an unlikely but possible situation where we would need that insurance. They said we don't necessarily need it for generic drugs that are usually pretty inexpensive. Generics make up about 90% of all drugs, of all prescriptions. We don't really need insurance for those types of drugs that are predictable. You know, a lot of folks are going to be taking them for the rest of their life, whether it's like high blood pressure medication, things like that. Why should you need insurance if you know you're going to be taking this specific drug that doesn't cost that much to make or manufacture? and you're going to be taking it for the rest of your life. So basically what this pharmacy that we spoke with is doing is just taking the raw cost it takes to manufacture these drugs, and they're adding on basically a dispensing fee, and they're cutting out all that nonsense in the middle, the PBMs or the insurance, and they're basically what their consumers are doing are paying out of pocket for those prescriptions, and they're saving a heck of a lot of money, you know, according to the pharmacy that we spoke with down in Pittsburgh. And basically what they've told us is that's kind of how it was back in the day. I mean, obviously before your and my time, Aaron, but back in the 70s and the 80s, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will remember, folks used to go to different pharmacies, local pharmacies, and they used to shop around for the best prices, kind of like we do for other household goods or common goods. You go around and you pay out of pocket for a prescription. But like I said, over time, with all the insurance coverage and all, you know, these middlemen and insurance companies and manufacturers and other pharmaceuticals kind of, you know, getting in on this whole complex supply chain, it really started to skyrocket costs over the last several decades. So like I said, you know, a complex issue. I really encourage you to check out the special report on uranewsnow.com under the Harrisburg Bureau. It's a two-part special report, parts one and two, but some really fascinating stuff. And yeah, like you said, there is a push for some legislation here to try to hold PBMs accountable, to try to give, you know, the Auditor General the ability to audit PBMs to see how much they might be making from state government programs like Medicaid. So there's a lot of, there's a big push for transparency and accountability. And, you know, we'll see what happens and whether the next governor will have any say in some of that legislation.
Absolutely. You know, you bring up a really great point there when you mention how the election that we're, you know, working toward right now is going to really have an impact on this. Now, you know, you had a really great opportunity to cover a large variety of these other issues, like the real ID changing and, you know, some of these other things that are happening across the state. Now, what I'm wondering is, how are these issues, in your mind, in your opinion, how are these issues going to play into the overall finality of what happens when the election day comes for both sides? Do you know what I mean? Like, is there one specific side of the Republicans or Democrats that's going to benefit from either one of these things being passed, whether we're talking real ID or the other thing that I wanted to discuss in relation to this? And I know I'm throwing a lot at you now, but the change or the idea of changing from a gas tax to a mileage-based user fee, that's something that has been really big discussed here in Pennsylvania that could probably be decided by the next election cycle.
Yeah, that's a great point, Aaron. And you talk sort of about like a mileage-based user fee, gas tax, things like that. You talk about a lot of, you know, regulations, things being done by like PennDOT and other departments, other state agencies, and sort of tying that in, I guess, to Republicans and Democrats. So obviously we know Governor Tom Wolf, Democrat. He's been the governor, and Republicans have held the majority in the General Assembly for the better part of over a few decades. So in that regard, it's, you kind of have this dynamic where you have the Republican majority General Assembly, you know, they have a whole bunch of things that they would like to do, you know, on their end. Sometimes they get vetoed by Governor Wolf. If it's something bipartisan, perhaps it gets signed. But Republicans have really, and this is, you know, very recently, have been trying to target regulatory overreach. So I know we've talked a lot about, you know, the bridge tolling initiative, which would have put that toll on a number of different bridges around Pennsylvania. And that was an effort sort of being spearheaded by PennDOT. And Republicans said, hold on, wait a minute. This is almost like a tax on users for, you know, for driving our freeways and our state interstates. And they said, let's wait a second here. There were a number of lawsuits filed. And, you know, eventually what happened was that state courts, local courts ruled in favor of those who brought the case forward. And essentially, to make a long story short, PennDOT's bridge tolling initiative was shut down. And there were a couple other, you know, regulatory things that were shot down from this administration, mostly as the result of budget negotiations over the summer. Governor Wolf and Democrats were able to secure a huge amount of education funding and other things as well. During those course of negotiations, there were things that were tossed, like the bridge tolling initiative, the charter school regulations, which we've reported on previously. So there were a number of things that were kind of on the table. used as sort of negotiating back and forth. But Republicans recently have been sort of, you know, highlighting some of their accomplishments to try to strike down some of that regulatory overreach, which is what they've been calling it recently. So that's something that could really shift, you know, depending on who we see as the next governor. Obviously, if we have a Democrat elected, I think it could be a lot more of the same, a lot more of what we've been seeing with the Republican majority assembly, as well as a Democrat governor. If they could, you know, work together and get some bipartisan things into law, great. But from my experience, I think we could probably expect to see more of the same with that Democrat governor. On the other hand, Republican governor with a Republican majority General Assembly, you know, you can certainly expect a lot of Republican issues and Republican legislation to make it through. Perhaps the most notable, the biggest topic that we've been hearing a lot about is abortion. When you have that Republican majority General Assembly and a Republican governor, you can certainly expect to see a number of different pieces of pro-life legislation to make it into law. Without a doubt. So I don't know if that entirely answers your question, because I'm trying to tie in, you know, sort of different regulatory things. You know, like you mentioned, the Real ID, that's another initiative by PennDOT, which is something that is happening. So I think, you know, in September, we can expect to see not Real ID. Real ID is optional, but I guess they're updating the current licenses, provide some enhanced security features and things like that. The deadline for Real ID, I believe, is next May, and that's going to be when, you know, you're going to need a Real ID or your license and a passport just to fly on domestic flights. So that's when they're going to start checking it at airports. You're going to need it to get into military bases or federal facilities. So you basically have the option to have everything in one with your Real ID, or you'll need to carry your passport along with your standard regular license or ID when you're going to these federal facilities, commercial, domestic flights, things like that.
Wow. You know, that is really fascinating that you mentioned some of those different things that could really affect people they're going to eventually really affect people here in Pennsylvania, depending on what option they choose to go for. And, you know, hopefully that they know that they're up to date for these things when the time comes, because, you know, you don't want to have someone going to travel and not being able to for some reason or another when that eventually were to happen. Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask in relation to what we've been discussing here is, you know, you see the different issues that each candidate in the gubernatorial race is focusing on. As we get closer to it, looking at the polling for this race, it is closer now than it really has ever been between, you know, the two candidates. And it's kind of surprising to see some of the results that are available right now. Just, and this is extremely, extremely preliminary, but when you look at some of the early results that are in and how close the race is, how much do you think voter turnout is going to play a significant role? And do you think that the absentee ballot and ways of voting in that type of means are going to still have a significant impact, being that it's an off-cycle year?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a great question. I think voter turnout is going to decide the election, hands down. I mean, you have, like I said, a midterm year where Democrats have, you know, held the majority in Congress. They've held the executive branch. They've held the governor's mansion here in Harrisburg. So a lot of people are predicting that it's going to be a strong year for Republicans. On the other hand, you know, you have many Democrats saying issues like abortion and the recent decision with the Supreme Court, you know, saying that that's going to draw out a large, you know, Democrat voter turnout. So whether that remains to be seen, we'll see. But again, it's really voter turnout. Are those Democrats going to show up to vote on issues like, you know, like the abortion, or are Republicans going to continue to show up to vote for the issues that concern them and that matter to them? And I think the big thing here is sort of those middle moderate voters, those independent voters. You know, how are people feeling when November 8th rolls around? Are people still paying a lot for gas prices? Is inflation still a serious issue? How is job growth looking? I know we saw a little bit of relief, you know, in the summer, in the later part of the summer. But since then, it has kind of, you know, plateaued, maybe even gotten a little bit worse. So really what those trends are in the next couple of months, you know, I think is going to play a huge factor in voter turnout and play a huge factor ultimately in the election. I think, you know, whether it's the race for Senate or the race for governor, you know, pretty for each party, I would say, you know, a pretty solid candidate all around. But really, it's going to depend on what some of those, you know, those outside factors are. A lot of, you know, things like how's the economy doing and other things like that. So, you know, I think voter turnout is going to play a huge role. As you mentioned, mail-in and absentee ballots. I mean, according to the Department of State, just the other day, I think they've had over 1 million requests already for mail-in ballots. Wow. And Pennsylvania is one of the, I'm not sure exactly how many states that cannot start processing and canvassing those ballots until Election Day. So oftentimes when we see, you know, Pennsylvania taking a while to finalize all those results and finalize, you know, count all of those mail-in ballots, it takes a couple of days. And we saw this in the primary for the Republican U.S. Senate election between McCormick and Oz. It takes a while to count all those ballots. And then there's been a couple court cases. It's been another big issue of whether undated mail-in ballots should count. So that's another thing too that the Department of State is advising local county elections offices on how to proceed with. But it is a big deal, and there's going to be a lot of mail-in ballots, as we just said, over 1 million requests, and it's probably going to take a couple of days for all of those to be processed. But yeah, those are going to play a big deal in this election. And obviously, you know, if folks are planning on going to the polls to vote in person, that's great. But there's also information and instruction if they do, or if they would like to request a mail-in or absentee ballot, that kind of thing. Mail-ins are, you know, sort of the no-excuse mail-in voting, which was passed by the General Assembly back in 2019, I think, through Act 77, basically allows universal mail-in voting. So anybody could apply for a mail-in ballot. Absentee ballots are a little different, whereas you have somebody who either can't physically make it to the polls or is, you know, temporarily living at another residence but still wants to vote in the district where they're from. You know, you can do it that way through an absentee ballot. So a lot of different things happening, you know, with as far as election and election news, but it's going to be pretty fascinating. We'll have a lot more coverage on it too between now and November 8th, of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, what I wanted to make sure to ask here, Brendan, is if people are looking to stay up to date with all the different coverage you're doing, and if they'd like to, you know, watch those special reports that you've talked about a little bit earlier here, what is the best way for people to find what you're doing and stay up to date with what you're up to?
I would say to, of course, watch Erie News Now, usually 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 5:30, sometime in the evening. I'm usually on at 5, but you can also stay up with the very latest on ErieNewsNow.com and the Harrisburg Bureau page, where we have all our daily stories and things that we are reporting on. You can also follow me on Twitter, on Facebook, B_Scanlon TV. If you want to put a link for those, Aaron, in your web copy there. But yeah, I would say Erie News Now weekdays at 5, and obviously ErieNewsNow.com for all the very latest. And I do try to get as much up on social media as I can as well.
Awesome. Well, Brendan, thank you for taking the time to join me today. I really appreciate your expert insight and the amazing work that you've been doing on reporting all of the different happenings in the state government of Pennsylvania from, you know, your Caperd seat there in Harrisburg. It is really a great opportunity for people here in Warren and, you know, all the different surrounding communities here in Northwest Pennsylvania to be able to talk with you and, you know, get an opportunity to learn what's happening at a statewide level. So thank you for going through this with me.
Absolutely, Aaron. And I'll say as well, if any of your listeners have any questions or they want to connect about anything election related or anything that we talked about, they can always feel free to send me an email or connect with me on social media, which again is up on our Harrisburg Bureau page on ErieNewsNow.com. But thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Community Matters. If you have any questions, inquiries, or suggestions, feel free to reach out at WarrenRadio.com and click Contact.